When it comes to addiction recovery and substance abuse therapy, things haven't changed very much in decades. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton interviews a licensed therapist who has years of data that may justify a new approach to recovery. That chat is now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening as always. Now, when I say the word disruption on this show, I normally mean a business or a concept that's being altered through a disruptive outsider using fresh eyes on an existing problem or solution. This week, the disruption we're talking about is a little more cultural. It's about first principles almost in its simplicity, but its effectiveness is borderline astounding. People who suffer from and battle with substance abuse and addiction have been handed virtually the same recovery playbook for decades: detox, talk therapy, random testing, etc. A new program is looking to disrupt addiction recovery therapy with music.
So national average recovery rates are hovering somewhere in the vicinity of 5 to 7%. And that's based on follow-ups that take place 1 month, 6 months, and 12 months after treatment. Based on the study we've been doing with Nova Southeastern, we're coming up at about 40%.
If the goal is to help addicts graduate from therapy and then stay sober, then Recovery Unplugged has 3 years of data to show there may be a better way forward.
Joseph Gorordo, and I'm the director of outreach for Recovery Unplugged.
Let's talk about how you came about to develop this program and some of your personal experience.
The treatment industry is historically an industry that's pretty resistant to change. So we started looking for ways to improve the efficacy of treatment, to make the outcomes better, to help more people get sober. In doing different research, you know, discovering the therapeutic applications of music, so much of the research on music therapy just lined up perfectly with the needs of addiction treatment. You know, we use music in absolutely every aspect of treatment, from the first phone call with the client all the way to when they're leaving treatment. As far as my personal experience, I'm a lifelong musician. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and I'm also a licensed chemical dependency counselor in the state of Texas.
Okay.
You know, Recovery Unplugged really embodies the three biggest aspects of my life: recovery, music, and healing.
This is a fascinating study that you've been working with, this research initiative. You know, one of my favorite quotes of all time of everything is from Friedrich Nietzsche, and he said, "Life without music is a mistake." You have a three-year research initiative. Let's talk a little bit about something that came in the pre-press, which was leveraging, quote-unquote, lived experience. What does that mean, and how does that apply to Recovery Unplugged?
The addiction community, right, is a community that is stigmatized and marginalized by society. Right. In seeking help, addicts are often very distrustful of any kind of authority or organization figure because of those experiences. So that means that our staff and our team and the people that we've been from outside, musicians that come in and perform for the clients, have to have some sort of real experience with this. You know, whether it's their own personal recovery or a loved one who struggled with substance abuse or something along those lines. Because if you don't have that kind of experience, one, you probably don't have a heart for this work. And two, you're probably not going to be able to really reach our clients where they're at without judging them, without shaming them, or breaking them down even further than where they've already gotten through their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So having that lived experience, and this is really unique because, you know, clients that have depression don't necessarily ask their therapist if that therapist has ever dealt with depression. They really aren't concerned with it, but for whatever reason, addiction clients, myself included when I was a client, it's very important to know that the person sitting across the table from you really understands where you're coming from and isn't looking down on you, shaming you, or viewing themselves as better than.
That's an important dynamic for sure. I have some experience in that. Let's talk a little bit about how you introduce music. I mean, you said it starts with the first phone call. Do you ask, like, what kind of music do you listen to? Or how do you inject it into the process, and does it vary from client to client?
So it does vary from client to client because we want to personalize it to them. Everybody's unique and is coming to the table with a different set of circumstances. Before someone comes into treatment, we do something called a pre-screen, which is where we gather all sorts of clinical information about them and their life and their health to make sure that we're the right place for them. Part of that is we ask them about their favorite kinds of music. You know, who's your favorite artist? What's a song that inspires you? Therefore, when we're picking up that client and transporting them to the facility or doing their admissions paperwork, that's the music that we play for them. because anybody going into treatment is going to have some fear, some anxiety. Maybe they're already feeling a little physically ill from detoxing. The music directly impacts the brain and creates neurotransmitters, which are going to naturally relax the person, help them feel more at ease, and also just let them know that we've listened to them. You know, we asked you this question because we want to make you feel more comfortable and make sure that you know that we're in this with you and we're going to individualize your treatment to you.
What pushed me into therapy was Tom Petty's Wake Up Time. You know that song? It's the last song on Wildflowers.
You might find someone to help you get over.
Oh, it's a fantastic song. Fantastic song.
And I still, it's something I can return to. Like, it'll come up naturally on my Spotify or on Google Play when I'm doing dinner or something. And it will automatically take me back there. Is that an anecdotal experience that you have found in your research, too?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it, you know. And it is very anecdotal, but music ties to memory. What are we doing in therapy? But we're talking about memories and experiences and processing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we can use the music to tie you into that memory and make you go deeper into it to be able to process it, you know, it puts us leaps and bounds ahead of the therapy process. So, like, for example, for me, I was, you know, one of the main male figures in my life growing up was my grandfather. And unfortunately, he never got to see me sober. The last time I saw him, I was still using. And I can think about him and remember what he looks like and different details about him, but they're surface details, right? But when I listen to music that he and I listen to together, when I listen to some of his favorite songs, I remember what it felt like to be with my grandfather.
Let's dig into some data. The results of your initiative here are impressive, and I'd like you to be able to call them out and let's make them into 2-inch headlines, because it looks like preliminary results are showing higher than national average recovery rates. Unpack that for me, please.
So national average recovery rates are hovering somewhere in the vicinity of 5-7%. And that's based on follow-ups that take place 1 month, 6 months, and 12 months after treatment. Based on the study we've been doing with Nova Southeastern, we're coming up at about 40%. That's not hard data yet. You know, they're still finishing
right.
up their longitudinal study, but clearly we're doing something right just based off of that.
Sure, it's a hockey stick up and to the right.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's what we need to see, right? We're in this epidemic and people are dying and we just need to do better. The other big thing is, clients come into treatment and they're uncomfortable and they need their medication and they're detoxing. And once they're done detoxing, the ego rebuilds and their minds start playing tricks on them and convincing them that they've got this.
Right.
Right. That's the classic treatment quote. I got this.
Right.
And a big problem in most treatment centers is clients leaving before medically approved, before the doctor and the treatment team says, hey, we think you're ready for the next step. So the national average can be as high as 40-42%
mm-hmm.
of clients that are discontinuing treatment prior to when recommended.
Right.
And what we're seeing is that, you know, our AMA rates are about 1/4 of that, 7-9%.
Is that the pink cloud that you sometimes hear about? Is that what you're talking about, the rebuilding of the ego?
Yes. And it's funny because it's brain chemistry. Like, we know exactly where that pink cloud comes from. When people are using alcohol and drugs, your brain naturally stops making things like dopamine and serotonin that make you feel good because you are supplementing that chemically. So once you get sober, your brain realizes that it's not making these chemicals. So it overshoots the mark in ramping up production, and you get the pink cloud effect, which is one day you wake up and the birds are singing and you feel good and you love life and you don't know why you would ever think of dreaming of using drugs again. And then you buy into that lie and you leave treatment.
What are next steps for Recovery Unplugged? What's the next phase?
Man, we're trying to go nationwide. We believe that we're doing something right, and it's our job to shout it from the mountains and make it available to as many people as possible. On the immediate horizon, we're getting ready to expand from Austin to Dallas. We are ramping up our facility in Virginia, which is already open, but we're trying to grow that. And then we are also getting ready to hopefully in 2019 open up a facility in Nashville, Tennessee.
That was Joseph Gorordo. He is the Director of Outreach for Recovery Unplugged and current president of the Austin chapter of the Texas Association of Addiction Professionals. As you heard him say in the interview, he struggled with a crippling IV heroin addiction for 6 years before recovery. He's been sober ever since. For links to Recovery Unplugged and other substance abuse resources, please check the show notes article for this week. It lives online at KGORadio.com. Coming up after the break, another cultural approach to a medical problem, empathetic, real, and jargon-free discussion about a cancer diagnosis.
We all cried, you know. We didn't know what lymphoma was. And she had actually called us back a few minutes later and said, you might want to go to the emergency room. But you think about in that moment, you just hear the C word. You're thinking, I have no idea what's coming up next in my life. We went online, well, my husband and my sister did, and everything that came back was medical jargon, statistics,
right,
numbers, and everything made us feel more overwhelmed and anxious.
Her cancer is in remission, but she discovered there really is not an online community for those who have recently been diagnosed with cancer. Until now. Please stick around for that one. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.